If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
So obviously the favorite part of the day for many people is when Ntabi Seng comes through with all her legal advice. And this is a moment for you to call in to send your questions. 086-000-00959. You have any legal questions that you have for Ntabi Seng, please send them through. You can also send on voice note on 063-688-0959. If there's anything she's not clear on, she will come back and give you the answer. So whatever the problem, please call in, ask the question. She's certainly here to help. And Ntabi Seng, welcome to the show.
Good evening, Ospamela. How are you?
We are here. We're alive. We don't have a budget.
Interesting times we're in.
Absolutely. It's interesting times. Unprecedented.
Yes.
But, we all of us need to be invested. We need to make our voices heard.
Yeah.
And whatever happens, I think it's good that people have an opportunity to express how they feel about this moment. So, were you going to be okay with 2% VAT increase?
How? It was going to kill,
who
but
can
also,
handle the 2% VAT increase?
I don't know who can handle. I was actually having a discussion with my husband and saying, how long has it been 15%? Because I can remember back in high school.
It was 14% at some point.
At some stage.
And then it made all of us so angry.
When it went up to 15.
Yeah. And now 2%
is... It's absolutely ridiculous.
In an economy where people are unemployed.
Yeah.
It would have been... it would have been ridiculous.
It would have been scary. Most people might end up being taxed into oblivion. And they end up leaving the workforce. Then it's a whole new problem.
It's a new cycle.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, we'll have to wait to see on the 12th what they table, and then we'll have that conversation then. So today, you want us to look at... Oh, this case has been on for such a long time.
For a very, very long time.
Let's look at where the loopholes are here, because there seems to be a back and forth. It's a West Bank case.
Yes.
West Bank versus an individual.
Yes.
What's the story here?
So, individual... bought a car from West Bank.
Mm.
And the specifics were that I want model X, Y, and Z. It should be having this and that. But the car that was delivered to this particular individual did not meet what this person wanted. Over and above that, it was even more expensive than the one in which the client for them had purchased. So, as a result... he then returns the car or speaks to West Bank and says, you sold me the wrong car.
Mm.
You didn't give me what I asked for. Mm. And what I asked for is tinted windows or whatever, but you did not give me that. And as a result, I want either one of two things. You give me the car that I asked for or you give me my money back.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. And then West Bank was like, no, it's not going to happen. And then as a result, he then took them to court. So, the difference between what he bought and what he ended up being asked to pay was around about, if I'm not mistaken, like maybe 150K, more or less. But because of the back and forth with West Bank and all of that and the damages and trauma, he then took them to court and he was suing them for 10 million rand. And that's where everything now starts.
Mm.
So it went from 10 million, now it's sitting at 50 million, and now it is in the Constitutional Court. So it's not only about the issue of the car anymore. It's now about, as a result of this case, I have lost my job. He had a government position.
Yes, he had a government position, and it's a 20-year-old case, right?
Yes. So I've lost my job, I've lost my pensions, my wife went into depression, 2023, I believe, and succumbed to it, if I'm not mistaken. So, yes, you owe me 50 million. So, where it is now, it's now about technicalities.
Yeah.
More than anything else. And I think we haven't really touched on technicalities, but we have a little bit as we go, that there's time frames for you to submit certain papers when you're dealing with the courts. So, in this particular instance, the court had given directives that the defendants, or the respondents rather, which is Best Bank, should have filed papers by a certain date. So the applicant, which is the man and his attorney,
Mr. Ndakhia,
yes, had said that the deadline for filing was the 30th of October 2024. Mm. And then the respondents are saying, nope, it was November 4th, 2024, and they're still in time. So the reason that this is important is that if you miss a deadline, whether it's by an hour or a day or whatever, you need to draft what we call a condonation application.
Mm-hmm.
So the condonation is you saying, askis, I missed the time. Mm. These are the reasons. Please accept my papers anyway, and also accept my reasons
for being late.
Yeah, yeah. And that they are reasonable. So now the applicant is saying, you not only did you file your papers late, you failed
to explain.
Yes, and that's where the issue is now. So now we're waiting for the court to say, yeah, applicant, you're right, it was the 30th, or to say, no, respondent was correct, it was the 4th of November.
50 million.
50 million.
What do you think his chances are?
I find it to be very exorbitant.
It's 20 years, ne?
Yes.
20 years, no job. How would he have come to the figure? It would have been the loss of income.
It would be the loss of income.
Of income, yeah.
And then the trauma, mm-hmm, that he would have suffered, because that is not quantified in any way.
But mainly quantifying the loss of income.
Yeah, mm-hmm, yeah. And also probably we are throwing in legal fees now as well, because 20 years worth of legal fees,
yeah,
is not child's play. So that
because
would be
he's been paying for the legal
that's
fees.
Correct.
That's but, correct. But the court would have anyway granted... Whoever is, would they have anyway granted whoever has lost the responsibility of paying legal fees? Is that always automatic?
Yes,
or not?
Yes. But then the cost order, it's called a cost order. So the cost order is always dependent on the case itself. So there is a punitive cost order, then there's attorney-client cost orders, and then it's just a cost order on a certain scale, scale A, scale B, whatever the
yes.
case may be. So if it's a punitive cost order, it means everything that I would have paid my attorneys would be what you would be liable to pay me
yes.
as the cost.
Yes.
So I would basically get my money back. But if the court decides that it's going to be on an attorney-client scale, it has to go to the master of the High Court, the Taxing Master, I beg your pardon. And then the Taxing Master is going to go through the statements from my attorneys.
Line by line.
And pick it apart with a tooth comb, with a fine tooth comb, and say, this one doesn't fall within something that we will allow. This one can stay. This one can whatnot. So if he spent $5 million, in 20 years for legal fees, it may end up being $1 million or $2 million instead. But now if it now goes on like normal cost orders, like a scale A or a scale B, it may go from he paid $5 million and then the court grants him $100,000 when it comes from the Texan master.
That's
it becomes severe. So the hope is always that the court grants you a punitive cost order, but punitive has to be a situation whereby the other party has like horribly misused the court and misrepresented the law, or you know, the attorneys did not do what's right. That's why in his papers he's saying a senior attorney who ought to have known better, who knows what the rules of the court are, we are in the apex court, you should know. If you are dropping the ball the way you are, I am entitled to you being given a cost order, sometimes in your personal capacity as that attorney. So I think that's where we're at right now.
Wow.
Mm.
What an interesting case. It's going to be, I think, a landmark case.
Yes, yes. If that's the if it's going to be in the Constitutional Court, which it is, and the Crown Court is on his side, as
this is going to be
it's going to be beautiful for people who buy cars. It's going to be beautiful.
Well, because corporations are known to drag these legal matters out, mm-hmm, because they want to exhaust you.
Yes.
That's. I mean, I'm not necessarily saying this is the case because there's no ruling here yet. But I'm saying corporations are known to do that.
Yes.
And so if, as he has done, taken it all the way up on his own, it's quite something. And
yeah,
if he does win, wow.
And it's going to give us quite a reprieve.
Yeah.
Because when you take matters such as this to the ombud, the ombud will give a ruling in your favor if you are, of course, in the right.
Mm.
But they don't listen. The car places or
the banks,
all of that. They, for whatever reason, it seems as if the ombuds ruling is not as binding as a high court or a court order, and yet they are. And if you go straight to the court without going to the ombud, that's the first thing they cite in their papers. The first step you were supposed to do was go to the ombud. But then they don't listen to what the ruling of the ombud says.
So you must just go do the whole thing.
Do the whole thing. Start from scratch and show that you have covered all your bases so that your matter is ripe for hearing.
Mm.
And then the court can say, yeah, no, we can see you did everything you could do. So now it is in our hands to make the decision for you.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Okay. The next one is collection of arrears.
Yes. So we've spoken
a little bit.
Sectional title
issues.
So we're talking about complexes and all of those things. So I think we've talked a little bit about what summons are like and what you should do. Don't ignore a summons. But when it comes to a sectional title, the first thing that we should be aware of is that they are not a credit facility. That's the first thing.
Okay. That's important.
Yes. So in other words, the NCA would not necessarily apply here. In fact, there's been case law that has come in Johannesburg and one in KZN whereby the applicant was saying, no, you can't charge me whatever amount.
Interest.
Yeah. And also legal fees over and above that because it doesn't conform with the NCA. And then the court had to dissect whether or not this would form. But because the sectional titles do not offer anything, they do not offer you a debit, not offer you services. It's just something that is there that is raised. It is then dealt with the sectional title. Is it scheme? What is it called again?
But scheme, yes, yeah.
Yeah. So that's what will be determining how your areas are going to be dealt with. But with that being said, there's something that usually happens with sectional titles. Instead of them following what the law says or their own rules of the body corporate or whatever, they just somehow hand over your debt to a debt collector or straight to an attorney.
Yes, they do.
Yes. So what is supposed to happen in terms of Section 3 of the sectional title scheme, they are supposed to firstly send you a letter of demand.
Okay.
And say, okay, in type saying, you owe X amount of money, whether it's a special levy or it's a normal levy, whatever the case may be.
Mm.
And then after that, you are supposed to get, after the letter of demand, that's when the summons will follow. So once you get an LOD, please respond. Don't ignore it because it can stop the whole legal process from starting.
Okay.
Yeah.
You've had cases where people will say they switched off my water,
mm-hmm.
as in not the city of Johannesburg,
but
not Eskom. This is the body corporate.
Yes.
They are maybe switching off your water and your lights. Let's start with the water.
Mm-hmm.
Being a human right.
Correct. So that's where the issue is. You cannot deprive somebody their basic human rights. That's the first thing. They're already going against the Constitution. There is case law that was decided that says that you are not permitted to do that. It is actually even, I think it went further to Eskom switching off certain lights in municipalities. And they were told you can't do that.
You must give provision. There is a minimum provision per household.
Yes. So as a result, them doing that is already illegal. You can take them to court for that. You can take it to the Constitutional Court if you have to. You can make an application for direct access to the court because it's a violation of your basic human right. You're depriving me of water. Yes, I owe you, but you do not have the right to do that. And most people are not aware that that's the situation. It goes back to what the sectional title scheme says because the first thing you need to do is send a letter of demand. Where is my LOD? You can't just, because I've been owing you for 2 months, for example, just switch off my lights or switch off my water. I need to see that there's an LOD. And here's the thing. Yes, we are always aware that people know that they owe.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, people know that they owe, whether or not. And here's what we always say: when you can see that your situation is not getting any better, please communicate with people, communicate with the creditor, communicate with the sectional, the body corporate, and say, "I am going through a tough time. My 1.5 per month that I can pay, I can't pay it right now, but I can pay 500 rand something." Versus nothing always gets you out of hot water because you can enter to a payment plan.
So the lights, are they permitted to switch those off?
No.
Even that?
Yeah.
So when they do go to the debt collector,
yes,
what, that's illegal?
They have to follow the steps first. Mm. You can't just go straight to the debt collector because what are you debt, basing it on?
Debt collectors also go and attach stuff.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. And in order for you to do that, you need a court order. So how is it that this debt collector is coming to attach my laptops, my TV and whatever to satisfy your debt, yet you have not gotten a court order?
Tell me something. I've heard body corporates attach your property.
Yes.
You owe 20,000 rand, your property is a couple of million.
Yes.
They attach it just to recover 20,000.
Correct. Rand. And then they will
sell it and you no longer have a home.
Yes. And that's when they invoke, I think it's section 8 or 9 of the Insolvency Act. They are saying you've committed an act of insolvency. And an act of insolvency is you failing to adhere to any debt that you have.
Yeah.
And then they make
are they permitted to go straight for the property, or the court or the law asks them to go first for other movable goods? In other words, sometimes I get the feeling there's malicious intent.
Yes.
When they go straight for the one thing that is your biggest asset, maybe. Yeah.
The law states immovable property is the last thing you attach. You have to start
with the little things. Like,
yes.
Go ask Eddie. I want a computer.
Mm.
He may pretend like he doesn't have.
Yeah.
And then you say, no, but I saw your watch.
Mm.
Gibon. And it looks like it's 20,000 rand.
Yeah.
And if he says no?
They don't have a choice because usually, okay, so the LOD would have been issued, and then after that, a summons would have been served on you.
Yeah.
Should you ignore that summons, ne? Then they can approach the court and make an application for a default judgment because you did not submit a notice of intention to defend, you did not reply, you didn't do anything. And by making an application for a default judgment, they are saying to the magistrate or to the judge, depending how much the amount is, and saying, this person hasn't done anything. So we assume that we can proceed as we have planned in our particulars of claim. And then the magistrate is going to look at the papers and say, no, I see what you mean. And then here's your default judgment. With that default judgment, I can now approach the sheriff. It's a court order now. I can now approach a sheriff, draft a writ of execution. That writ of execution is then sent to the sheriff. And then the sheriff has all the authority to go into the property. It would not be housebreaking. It would not do anything. Go into the property.
They're authorized.
Yes, they're authorized. And then go in and write a list of the things that they found.
That are valuable.
Correct. And then with that list, then they go and they draft, they put in the writ, they amend the writ so that they can say that we found 1, 2, 3, 4 in the property that can be sold. And then that writ is put on the notice board at the sheriff, notice board at the court, and then everyone who passes, they can see that, oh, there's an auction happening and they're selling a TV and whatever. You go, you buy, you pay, they pay into the sheriff's account. The sheriff account then pays the attorneys or the person whose debt is owed, and that would be that. And if after the movables have been sold, they go back, there's no other movables to attach, that's now when they make an application for the writ to now attach the house or the immovable property.
Okay. I have a question here, and it's about a garnish order.
Yes.
Are companies allowed to go ahead with a garnish order even though I opposed it as an employee?
As the employee?
Yes.
So Ganeshi orders.
Do they ask, by the way?
No.
Do they ask you in Tabi saying, there's somebody here who says, how padeli, I don't know, what, maintenance, what?
Yeah, it's maintenance.
School fees, whatever.
Mm. A Ganeshi order is a court order. The employer cannot say no. Because if they do that, then they are in contempt of court. So, unfortunately.
The employer.
The employer. So, unfortunately, whether or not you accept it.
So, even if I contest with the employer to say, stay out of my personal business.
Yeah.
They do they have time to wait for me to explain why?
No. Because what happens is that Ntayusin is going to go to the match court and say, it's been 6 months.
Apadali anything.
And the maintenance amount per this court order is 6,000 rand every month. We are now on month number 6. Or even get the first 30 days. I always say, don't wait for 6 months. Wait for the first default. And then when that default happens, you go and you approach the court, and then the maintenance officer then will try and get hold of this person to understand what's happening. Refusal to do that, then you can fill in an application for a Ganeshi order. That application is then taken to the magistrate. It's an order of court, then it's sent to the employer. The employer receives it. It's an order of court. So
the employer has to pay into whatever account that's been given to them.
Correct. So they before they pay your salary into your account, they remove
that amount.
And if the Ganeshi order even deals with the 6 months that you haven't paid, and that is your entire salary, it means that month you don't have a salary.
For six months,
yeah. There's nothing you can do, unfortunately. The one thing you can do is go to the
resign.
Court.
No, but guys, why do we pretend like they don't?
They do, Shelley.
But that's what they do.
The
guy resigns or the lady resigns.
Yeah.
Let me not paint men. They resign and then Mutateng says, ah, kampane ka lek sabiri. It happens.
It does all the time. But if they're not resigning, apa yaba lo rescind the judgment.
Eddie's thinking, I forgot you people are like this.
Yeah.
Let's take a voice note.
Good evening. Can I please ask you to clarify more on that where the trustees charge interest on owing levies? Like if the levies are supposed to be paid by the 7th and then by the 7th, maybe you haven't paid just for that 1 month, then you get charged interest. Can you please clarify on that one for me, please?
Okay, so the interest is similar to the legal fees. I know a lot of people are always saying, how can legal fees be payable and all of that when it comes to levies. The courts have decided that this is the way that Boji corporates make money in order to maintain the property, to make sure that it's up to the standard that you like and all of those. So they are entitled to do that.
They're encouraging you to pay on time.
That's correct. Mm. So that all these facilities that you rely on can run as smoothly as possible. Now, what they are allowed in their... what's this, the code of conduct or whatever it is for the body corporate, they would usually stipulate that failure to pay, or they should stipulate, not usually, that failure to pay by the 7th or whatever, interest amount of 10% or whatever will kick in. So that they are still also allowed to charge, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So what you would do if you cannot pay whatever for the next month, rather tell them and then enter to a payment plan, or alternatively just, you know, pay the full amount.
I think the concern for some is that then it just spirals out of control.
That's correct.
Interest upon it, and then you can't pay the original amount anyway because you're busy paying the interest and all of that.
Yeah. So
are there limitations to how much they can keep charging you interest?
No, interest is interest. So what I remember in one case of mine, what we did was then we entered into a payment
agreement.
Yeah. To say, in total, including your legal fees, we owe you...
Stop it here.
Yeah.
This is... Can we stop it here?
Yes.
And then can we get into an agreement so he can catch up?
That's correct. And we agreed that including the normal fees and this amount, this is how much we'll pay per month. They caught up. We're fine. The default judgment has been removed.
Oh,
that's
wonderful.
It. Yeah.
Let's take a quick break and we'll take more of those questions on 086-000-00959 and those voice notes on 063-688-0959. All right, Ntabi Singh Dubazana is here. She's here to answer all your legal questions, and you may also send in those questions on 086-000-00959. You may also send on voice note on 063-688-0959. Ntabi Singh, let's just, there is a note here that came through saying, well, there's a case where the body corporate was authorized to cut power supply to defaulters. You had a different take on this?
Yes. It has to be, I would love to see that case law and see what it says. But as I know it, I think it's in the Johannesburg High Court, wherein, unless it went on appeal, then it's a different story. But in that particular case, I can't remember the parties exactly, the court overruled that and said you don't have a legal stance to cut the power. That's what I'm basing my stance on. I just want to find that case. I can't find it right now, but I will find it and then I will let you guys know.
Okay. So as far as we know right now, body corporates, they shouldn't be using water and electricity as a tool to encourage you
to
pay.
That's correct.
As far as we know right now.
It's the same thing as if you're going to evict somebody because they're living in your property and you've bought the house or whatever the case may be, and then you're like, let's cut off water or rental.
No. I've seen better.
Yeah.
They take out the door hinge. The person removes the door.
So you can't...
You can't close... There's no door. You can't stay in the house. Don't do it, guys.
No.
Don't do it.
No. Because otherwise, this person might approach the court and apply for what we call a mandament van spoli.
What is that?
So a mandament van spoli is called a spoliation order. You're putting me back in the position I would have been in had you not acted the way that you did, irrespective of whether that property is mine or not. That's a very interesting common law thing. So
let's just go back.
Yes.
Ntabi Singh is my tenant.
Yes.
She's not paying rent.
Yes.
I want her out. And the law, as we know now, I think at some point you need to then give her alternative accommodation.
So you're doing the PIE Act in that situation.
And I just can't be bothered because Ntabi Singh must just leave.
Yeah.
And I decide I'm going to yank out the gate or the garage or the door of the house so that there must be discomfort and then she must be forced to leave. You're saying I would be in the wrong.
Yes,
you as the landlord,
100%. So I remember one case during the COVID times. This gentleman had rented out an Airbnb, and because you couldn't move when shutdown hit, the agreement, he was supposed to be there only for a week with his family, and then unfortunately, and then they ended up staying there for a good year. And then while they were him and the owner of the property entered into a rental agreement whereby 17,000 was going to be the rent. And 3-4 months later, he started defaulting. The owner then decides that they're going to take away what's in the Airbnb, the pizza, all these things. So this person cannot cook with his family and whatnot. This person approached the Randburg Match Court and applied for a spoliation order. And all those things had to be returned because you have no right to do that. Yes, they are your things.
How?
Yes. Huh? Yes.
And then you go to court.
Correct.
Huh? Does it make sense? No. Guys, let me understand this.
Yes.
Yeah, 17,000.
Yes.
We'll see. And then the court then says he's right. We must return the pizza.
It's a spoliation order. That's how it works.
And explain how that works.
So a spoliation order, you need to prove that you had a right in the property. Right doesn't mean you had ownership in the property. You have a right in the property, and you the removal of that is against kind of what's the exact wording, but all of those things, the right that you had at the time, the right of usage of the property, has to be returned to you. That's what amendment for spoli
and so with. And so this particular person continue to stay with the pots and pans?
Yes.
And not pay?
Yes.
Until what? Until when?
And then we made an eviction application.
Yeah.
And then after that, then once the eviction application started, I think a month or so into it, then they left the premises. Yeah.
Okay, so the way to do it is to get an eviction order.
Yes. And with that eviction process, your attorney would have to also cite the city,
yes,
whichever city you'll be in. And then the city, your attorney also has to show that the city has shown that they can find alternative accommodation for this particular person.
The city must do it.
The city must do it.
Yeah.
If this person is employed and can secure other means, you put that in the papers as well to say, no, Pamela is employed at Kaya FM.
The city doesn't have to find alternative
accommodation. Correct. She has the means to find alternative accommodation. She's not reliant on this. Even if there's a vulnerable person that lives with her, an elderly person or a child, it still does not say that she cannot provide for herself.
Mm. Because the city themselves are going to have to explain why they can't provide, because they wouldn't prioritize somebody who's working,
who's
got an income.
That's correct. They provide for the vulnerable, where there's children and where there are the elderly.
Mm. All right. We've got a voice note coming through.
So we have a unique case in our estate. There's people who lost their home because they couldn't afford it anymore. And then there's another couple that bought the house in the estate. But now the ones that lost their house can't afford to move, apparently. So for some reason, the other couple offers them, instead of going through the courts and trying to evict them through the court and following that process, they offer to pay them to move and paying 2 months rental off in their new home. But now the dispute is that the people that need to move want the money paid directly to them, and these guys are saying, no, we'll find you a place and then we'll pay into that house directly. I don't know how it's going to end, but it's been very, very interesting.
Okay, let's unpack that.
Sure. I don't think I even understood what that means. So, Ntabiseng and Pimelo are selling each other a property.
Mm. But the one can't afford to move because, yeah, they can't afford to move.
So the seller can't afford to move?
No, the buyer.
The buyer?
No. The seller can't afford to move.
Yes. So the seller can't afford to move, but if I'm paying you
to move,
mm-hmm, you should be able to move. So I don't understand. Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Okay. We were going to play it again.
Yes.
For clarity.
Yeah.
But I think, I'm not sure whether we can, but we were going to try to play it again. I can see it. Okay, let's try play it.
So we have a unique case in our estate. There's people who lost their home because they couldn't afford it anymore. And then there's another couple that bought the house in the estate. But now the ones that lost their house can't afford to move, apparently. So for some reason, the other couple offers them, instead of going through the courts and trying to evict them through the court and following that process, they offer to pay them to move and paying 2 months rental off in their new home. But now the dispute is that the people that need to move want the money paid directly to them, and these guys are saying, no, we'll find you a place and then we'll pay into that house directly.
Yeah, right.
I don't know how it's going to end, but it's been very, very interesting.
Yeah, they're right.
Mm, Okay, now I get it. So they lost their home, which means obviously they're not selling the property. It just happened that it was sold. And as a result, now they need to move because somebody else bought it. Isn't this the story that we hear over and over and over again? So it's likely that they ignored a summons at some stage and then the property was then auctioned and then this new couple bought it. And as a result, now they can't move into their own property because this family won't leave. Now, seeing as there's offers to go and pay for you to go live whatever in another place, they're avoiding the legal route, which is the eviction we were talking about just now. So if the
is clever, I mean, what they're doing, it's actually more than
it's cheaper.
Generous.
Yeah. So if they can get them out and then they leave
and
they
make sure that they are moved.
Yes, they are moved.
They do the alternative accommodation thing.
They're fine. But should they refuse to when they eventually eviction thing, then they can prove to the court that we tried, offered.
Yeah.
And then they rejected it.
Is sometimes the issue what kind of accommodation?
It's always.
What kind of accommodation?
Yeah. I don't want to move.
No,
from,
I don't want to.
Four ways to Cosmo. No. Because the issue is one downgrade, but you can't afford it anyway.
Yes.
So that's usually what the case will be. It'd be interesting to find out how that ends, actually.
No, they're being silly. That's let's just call it what it is.
Oh, yes. To answer the issue about the body corporate cutting electricity, the case, I can't find the name of the case on Safely. I'm trying. But the body corporate does not have an inherent power to do that.
Mm.
So they cannot, legally speaking. So I would be grateful to see if that message is based on another case so that we can see if that case is going on appeal or whatever the case may be. But as we stand right now, it cannot be done.
Tabisa, where do people find you?
So people can send us an email on info@dubazanaattorneys.co.za. Alternatively, they can call us on 087-265-8010 or send us a WhatsApp on 079-654-7523. We'll be moving home soon.
Oh.
So, once we've moved in, I will then give us out our new address.
Excellent. Thanks, guys. We'll be back tomorrow at 8.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.